the UCR Podcast.
Well, it is always a ton of fun to ride the wild, wild roller coaster that is any conversation with Sebastian Bach. And the legendary former vocalist of Skid Row joins us this week on the podcast to preview his upcoming tour. That starts later this month. You can see all the tour dates and all things Baz, as a matter of fact, at his official website, which is conveniently located at sebastianbach.com. It's Matt Wardlaw. We talk about a lot of different things with Sebastian during today's conversation, including, of course, his love for Triumph, Diamond David Lee Roth, Motley Crue, and we discuss his most recent album and the very entertaining music video for What Have I Got to Lose, which has now, in fact, hit 2 billion views as you are hearing this. If this is your first time hearing the UCR podcast, make sure to follow us so you'll get future episodes. And if you've been here for a hot minute and have not left us a review, do us a quick favor and do that if you would. It all helps a lot. If you want to read even more about the history of Sebastian Bach and Skid Row, it is all waiting for you at ultimateclassicrock.com, where we will also keep you up to date with all of the latest news and stories. Enjoy our conversation with Sebastian Bach. Here's where I want to start, man. I always love talking to you because you are a music fan like us. And so the Triumph reunion tour, as soon as I heard that was happening, I was like, man, Sebastian is probably really stoked about this.
I'm totally stoked about that. It just blows me away how music has a life of its own. And, you know, I mean, when I look at Triumph reuniting, then I say to myself, Skid Row could reunite because nobody saw that coming at all. So, hey, Snake and Rachel, what do you think of the Triumph reunion? Like, I mean, it's, all you got to do is show up. Vince Neil had a quote a long time ago. He goes, the thing about being successful, he goes, all you got to do is like show up. Just like show up. Like what's the big deal? So, but anyways, you could never have predicted that in a million years. And, you know, they picked Todd Kearns to be part of it. Todd plays bass on my new album, Child Within Man, and he's in the videos, What Do I Got to Lose? And so that's a cool connection. And then I was fortunate enough to be part of the Triumph tribute album, Magic Power. I sang the Rick Emmett vocal 24 Hours a Day and Gil Moore on Rock and Roll Machine. And that was a big bunch of hype there. And then that led to the Triumph reunion tour, which is amazing. I can't believe it. Music has a life of its own. That's all I can say for sure.
Yeah. And I love the versions that you did of both of those songs, but I particularly loved your take on 24 Hours a Day and the way it starts off the record, because it kind of sets a pretty great tone that as a music fan, you can kind of picture sitting in front of the stereo hearing Triumph for the first time. And that's what music is supposed to do, is to kind of take you on that journey.
Well, you know, there's two ways of thought to doing a tribute album. Like I hear some people say, oh, I want to hear the song totally different and a new way of doing the song. When I sang 24 Hours a Day, that's a Rick Emmett vocal. And I was playing tribute to Rick Emmett's tone and Rick Emmett's range. And when they brought me that song to sing in the studio, guess what? They had transposed it down a key or two. And I go, no. I go, no. I go, redo it in the original key. And then I'll sing it. And they were like, what? And I had them replay the whole thing in the proper key. And I sang it in the original key. And I did not want it to be different at all. Be Rick Emmett's vocal, the same tone, same key, same range. And to me, that's a tribute that only I could do, because I don't hear anybody else singing that high with that tone. So
yeah,
I wasn't out to reinvent the Rick Emmett vocal. I was there to hopefully be in the same ballpark as the Rick Emmett vocal.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I got to say that it didn't come out exactly the way I planned. Because if you know Triumph, 24 hours a day goes right into a heavy part. And it was my idea to go from the 24 hours a day right into Rock and Roll Machine. So, that's what I, but I, when it, when the album came out, it was two different songs, but that's not how I planned it. Maybe they did that because of publishing or something. Like maybe they couldn't combine the two. But if you want to know, I might, if I have time someday, I'll make an edit of the way I planned it. It was supposed to go right into it. But
I was just going to say, man, I want to get out my audio editor now and just make that segue myself because I can hear it, man.
That's it. That's what I planned. But I think it might have been a publishing thing. Like whoever wrote 24 hours a day didn't write Rock. I don't know. Who cares? It could have made it into a reunion tour. So right on Triumph.
Dude, you mentioned Vince Neil. You did something really classy last year. I'm going to preface this by saying I know of the Motley Crue history in your timeline, but last summer, for folks that don't know, when Vince had to miss some solo shows due to health stuff, you stepped in on a gig in Niagara Falls, took that place. You also were at Summerfest where Vince was supposed to be, but you jammed Shout at the Devil in your own set, which you've done before, but like a lot of the covers you do, man, video of this made the rounds. People were impressed, and I wondered for you as a music fan, what do you kind of appreciate about that song and Motley's songs in general?
Well, I love how high the vocal is. I'm always a sucker for high singing. And, you know, that song is so tough. It's so heavy. It's so cool. And, you know, when that album came out, Shout at the Devil, Motley Crue is probably my favorite band in the world. When I was 14, that kind of age, they were my favorite band. And so that goes right in my heart. And again, you know, we don't do Shout at the Devil lower key or anything. It's the same key as the album. And I'm surprised that I can sing that. I'm like, wow, like I can. I just have it, you know. We did 91 cities last year. That's right, 91. We don't have any backing tapes at all, nothing. We don't have the backing vocals on tape. We have a real lead singer named Fede. My bass player, Fede, is the only musician I've ever played with that can sing in my range. And we've worked this out now where, like, before I got to hit a high scream like Child Blew a Child Away or those crazy ass screams, he'll come in and sing the line before the scream, just like me. And then I've hit it hard. And without him, sometimes I might be running out of gas a little when I need a little break, you know, because you don't sing the record like one take. you make these records like perfect, you know. So to have a guy that can come in for a line and I could take a breath, that has changed my game live. Like, you know what I would say, man, we also get along so good. We have this thing where after every show they'll come to my hotel room and we'll just hang out and watch YouTube or whatever. One night we watched the M3 festival that we played recently with David Lee Roth. Yeah. And our performance is impeccable. It's totally pitch perfect and everything is perfect. And I'm very critical watching, you know, live performances, but I would tell any fan to go watch the M3 show on YouTube and check us out. We're pretty fucking badass. It really came out great, that show.
Yeah, I think that's kind of great, is because you come from the old school where there were no tips, there were no tricks. You have to figure things out. It, like, here's how I did the song. How's this going to happen live? And so you mentioned Roth, for example. I thought it was very smart the way Roth like brought out like those barbershop quartet background singers. Like, so I think there's some folks like yourself and Dave that are out there figuring things out in some pretty innovative ways that at the end of the day, it just delivers the best show possible for your fans and everybody wins.
Well, I saw the David Lee Roth show in Vegas, and those guys, you know, those barbershop guys, they did Running with the Devil, and one of those guys did all of the David Lee Roth, like, and I was like, I don't know who that guy was, but I was like blown away. And it doesn't matter that Dave wasn't doing Dave did great too, but to have a guy up there that's doing it with him was amazing. The only thing I missed in the David Lee Roth show, which I loved his show, it's a great show, but one of my favorite David Lee Roth albums is his Crazy from the Heat EP, where he does Frank Sinatra, Easy Street, That's Life.
That's what all the people say. I'm riding high on Monday, shot down in the
And I love that album. And I thought that Dave singing That's Life and Easy Street, and especially Just a Gigolo, at his age would be completely appropriate. And he did nothing but Van Halen. But when I got home, I put on that Crazy from the Heat, and just a gigolo, you know, I ain't got nobody cares for me. Humbly bibbly zibbly boobly, humbly bibbly zibbly bop. I mean, that I wish he would do those songs, like, even more than Yankee Rose, because he's doing all the Van Halen. But if he did Just a Gigolo, That's Life, like, looking back on his life in Vegas, doing Huge. Frank Sinatra, Dave, man, throw those tunes in the set, man. Just a Gigolo, I'm telling you, people would, like, that goes with his age and his experience, and I think that would be incredible if he threw those tunes in there.
And you know what, songs like Just Like Paradise and other stuff from the 80s, like, those are just as iconic to certain generations as some of those Van Halen tunes, man.
Well, those are cool too, but I think that the Crazy from the Heat is more of a jazz kind of Broadway theater thing, and he's covering the rock and roll bases by doing all those Van Halen songs. But I think a guy doing That's Life at a later stage in his life just lyrically fits so perfectly. And Just a Gigolo is such a big hit. And, you know, him not being in Van Halen, I ain't got nobody cares for me. Like, that's kind of his vibe. And I just would love to hear those songs live.
Dude, you mentioned your newest album, Child Within the Man. And I have to ask, like, how much fun was it making that video for What Have I Got to Lose? That's a fun music video.
It's coming up on 2 million views, actually. It might be there today. I saw yesterday, it was like 19999 something. So that's a lot of views. Back in my day, 2 million was double platinum. So yeah, that is a fun video. We were trying, you know, when we started that video, I was like, let's make it be like Whitesnake, which is Tawny Kitaen on the car. Okay, so we got the car, and I asked my wife, I go, okay, now we need Tawny Kitaen. And I said to my wife, I go, hey, would you be willing to put on a bikini and high heels and wash my car in the video? And she goes, okay. So I go, all right. And that's a real covert undercover shoot. Like, the director just found a car wash in Vegas that nobody was really at or anything, and we didn't ask anybody. And my wife got in the car in her just a bikini, and it was like midnight because we didn't want the cops to come or anything. And we went in the car wash, and he goes, okay, go. And she's running out there, and we're shooting it as quick as we can. And then she gets back in the car. And if you look closely, there's one frame where there's a window from the other car wash, and some guy's like got his head going, like, what the fuck's going on in there? And like, you can see his face, like, and we just released another version of that video called the Car Wash Hot Wax Edit. So if you like that, there's a whole new video that my wife directed. By she went in and picked her favorite shot, so go check that out. So we were aiming for Whitesnake, but we ended up with Cool Hand Luke.
Yeah,
because when we put the video out, Matt Sorum, he texted me. He goes, "Holy shit, dude! Your new video is fucking amazing." He goes, "It's Cool Hand Luke with Steve McQueen." I go, "What are you talking about?" He goes, "Watch this," and he sent me a YouTube link of the scene in Cool Hand Luke where the guys are on the chain gang by the side of the road and the girl washes the car, and it is so much like my video that I can't even believe it, and no wonder it's at 2 million views.
The live show, how have you seen these songs evolving as you've been playing them live for these past couple of years?
Well, you know, I don't buy into this whole thing of we can't do any new song. I don't, you know, I remember, you know, Vinny's band, Vinny Paul, Hell Yeah. And he did an interview that I read back then saying, you know, all these bands, we don't do new songs. He goes, we do fucking new songs. We don't have that problem. My band doesn't have that problem. It's not oldies night. We do play old songs, but we play new songs too. So we're doing songs in my set from the year 1987 to the year 2024. And that's a pretty good run. And there's no complaints from the fans. They like the, you know, I don't know. You know, when people say older fans tune out in new music, I feed off new music. I don't hear a lot of it that comes out now that I like because it's all processed or whatever, but I'm always looking for new songs to get off on. Like I get bored of the same song over and over and over and over and over and over. I like to find new things, you know.
How much have you been writing or at least thinking about the next record?
Well, the way I come up with songs is that I'm a bit of a hoarder. I have a whole house full of rock and roll stuff. And I collect things. And one of the things I collect are riffs and lyrics and titles. And I just always, if I hear of a good title, I have hundreds of them in my phone, like in the text file, you know. And then if I'm collaborating with a guitar player, like John Five, send me the riff for Freedom. I go, okay, yeah, that's a good one. And I collect this stuff, and then I'll make a playlist on my phone, and I'll go running, and I'll listen to it, and eventually that playlist becomes an album. Like when it's as good as I can make it, and I got a guy like Elvis Basquiat, the producer, who helps me. Like he's so easy to make music with. It's just crazy. He's a great writer. Like I write with him, and it's all about being surrounded by people who want to help you and not be against you or jealous of you, which I've had my whole life. So it's all about the right team, you know, and also having the right team on the business side. I got a record company, Raining Phoenix Music, and I got Marta helping me right here. Hi, Marta. But I have a whole team of people that help me. My management, Rick Sales, is the best rock and roll manager out there. They got Ghost and Slayer, and you know, they are incredible. They keep me very, very busy. You know,
you've been with Rick a long time.
Yeah, about 15 or more years.
Yeah.
And my agency is incredible. These guys keep me very busy, man. Like I'm really busy. So I mean, you have to have a team in order to you can't just do it in your basement by yourself, like with your fax machine. Like you need help to do it correctly. And I have a great bunch of people helping me out. Thank you, Marta.
You brought another person in the conversation that's not Marta, but you mentioned Collector Baz. So I have to ask Collector Baz, what's something you've gotten recently that you're really stoked that you have added to your collection?
Well, there's an easy answer. So I own Gene Simmons's Gargoyles from the Unmasked tour. Remember, you know the series, those two giant gargoyles that he did photos with, like in a castle? I own those gargoyles. I got them back in the early 90s from a Kiss collector who brought them to my house. And when Kiss toured Australia back in 1980, the Inner Sanctum tour, like when Kiss came and like dominated the country of Australia, like on the Unmasked tour, you know. So Australia had all this Kiss stuff that was only available in Australia, nowhere else, right? And Gene did all these. There was posters and stuff of Gene with these gargoyles that you could only get in Australia. Not only that, you could only get them in the Kiss Army order form. You couldn't get them in the store. You had to mail away. And there is this big poster of Gene with the gargoyles that you could only get by mailing away from it in 1980. And some guy I put out, I go, anybody has any merch of these gargoyles, I'm going to have it framed and put them right next to the gargoyles. So this fan came to the hotel with the fucking Gene poster with the gargoyles that he mailed away for back when he was a kid. And he brought it to me along with the Ace Frehley poster where he's in the blue tunnel running around with that laser gun. So he brought both of those because an Ace just passed. So that Ace one is incredible. So I paid him way too much money. Duh. I'm not going to tell you how much, but whatever. So I brought those home. Both of those posters from Australia, and I'm going to have them both linen backed, which is a process that I've had done to my most rarest posters, is where, you know, like these French movie posters from the 20s that are paper, very, very flimsy, fragile paper. There's a process where they can linen back these posters, which makes it into cloth, which eliminates all of the wrinkles, and it makes it impossible to tear and raises the value exponentially and can make an old poster look brand new. So I'm taking both of those Kiss posters to the linen backing facility, and I'm going to have them framed, and I'm going to put the Gene one right in between those gargoyles, and that's my favorite new things I got. I also love the Dress to Kill box set, and I love the Kiss Alive box set, but I love the Dress to Kill Blu-ray of the 5.1 surround. And there's different settings. You got the Dolby Atmos. The one that I like, and if you're in my living room, is the True HD 5.1 setting in my living room will blow your head off. Like it sounds incredible. The best version of Kiss Dress to Kill that I know of, and I know them all. So that's a great thing too.
Well, this is where I'm going to leave things, Baz. Besides the tour, what else is coming up that you know, for the rest of the year?
I have art shows coming up. I'm very happy to be affiliated with Wentworth Galleries, who represent Paul Stanley, Joe Satriani, Ronnie Wood, Elvis Costello. I've already had two art shows with them, which were extremely successful. And I have a third one coming up on January 25th in Atlantic City at the Hard Rock. And the night before that, we play the Hard Rock with Tesla. Nice. So that'll be a great show. And then we start our tour with Stitched Up Heart opening up the show. And they got a new record that was just put out, a new single, so good for them. And it's going to be a whole year of rock and roll because the party never ends, people.
Awesome, man. Well, be safe out there. Always a pleasure to talk, man. Have a great rest of the day.
You too, dude. Thank you, Matt.
We've reached the end of another episode of the UCR Podcast. It is Matt Wardlaw. We appreciate you listening. If you enjoy what you're hearing, please rate and review wherever you are listening and hit subscribe so that you'll receive future episodes of the podcast from Ultimate Classic Rock.